You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. I'm your host, Abby Norton. Today I'm speaking with Dustin Brewer and Frank Downs about Wi-Fi, where it started, where it is today, and why it's so important to secure it properly. So Frank, to start us off, can you talk about what's new in the world of Wi-Fi?
So Dustin and I were talking about Wi-Fi 6 became official, I think it was this month, right?
I think it just became official this month.
We were talking about it, we're like, why did they call it 6? And then we realized it's like the 6th spec for it and so forth. And we were talking about all the different types. Wi-Fi is something that I think is commonly misunderstood, especially in the field. Well, one, by a lot of people who are not in IT at all, right? Information security at all. And then also by a lot of people in the field of cybersecurity, which has resulted in some legitimately bad hacks throughout the years that have like really brought some companies low. So we were talking about it in the context of, you know, with all these things that are changing, there are a lot of different cybersecurity concerns and a lot of different pros and cons with different each Wi-Fi spec and things that are happening. So we wanted to discuss that a little bit specifically because as these things become more, I guess, widely accepted and even getting to the point where there's a lot of laptops. Wow. Wait, when was the last time, Dustin, you bought a laptop with an actual Ethernet cable connector in it?
Recently, I think it was recently because I tend to buy the bigger.
You do buy the motherships.
I do. I buy the gaming laptops, not because I'm a huge gamer, although I used to be, but I just don't have time to do it anymore. Really, the reason why I buy gaming laptops is because they usually have all the peripherals. They have a bigger screen, right? Because I'm getting older, right? I need those big screens so I can see things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my current one actually has a Ethernet cable on it.
Is it really that big Asus one?
Yeah, I think it does.
Which, for those of you who don't know, Dustin does get the coolest laptops with like multiple. Well, you have to when you're the principal futurist, by the way. When you're
That's
a futurist,
right.
Yeah, you have to have the weird stuff.
I live in the future.
As far as yours truly, I have not bought a laptop with an Ethernet port probably since, 2008. Because I know when I got my 2013 and my 2016 builds, none of them have it. And we're becoming more dependent on wireless, specifically Wi-Fi. And so we were talking about the different like considerations you have to have. Because if you're not careful, Wi-Fi can be... Now, yes, Wi-Fi can be your best friend at the house and so forth, but can also be a serious security issue as well. Wait, you got it today. You just got the most recent Pineapple, for example, right, Dustin?
Yes.
Actually, you know what? You describe it because it's your cool thing that you bought. And it's one of the examples of things you need to think about when you talk about the concerns with wireless security.
Absolutely. And just for the audience out there, Frank and I are very old hat at this when it comes to Wi-Fi specifically. It's actually Frank and I met working on a Wi-Fi related job. So we had Pineapples back then. If you don't know, if you're not familiar with a Pineapple, real quick, it's a piece of hardware that has software specifically utilized for doing penetration testing on a Wi-Fi network. Currently, the new version they just released, and this is a company called Hack5 that does this, they just released the Mark 7, which is their 7th version of the Wi-Fi Pineapple. I don't remember, by the way, Frank, Mark 1.
Yeah, I don't remember all those other marks. I'm like, wait, when did we start keeping count here?
I kind of remember the Mark 5, and I have my other Pineapple out here as well, but I pre-ordered this thing, I want to say like 3 days ago, and it came today, which is amazing. That's the best turnaround, I think, on anything I've ever pre-ordered. Anyway, so this one's great. They've really kind of streamlined the GUI, which I know is sacrilege to some of the pen testers out there who are listening, who would prefer the command line, but it does make things a lot easier, especially when you're dealing with a lot of different Wi-Fi access points and clients. And basically, it's kind of a nice user interface to be able to do some penetration testing as well as vulnerability testing on a Wi-Fi network. You can actually do some really neat enterprise functionality with these. And you can, if you do have an enterprise, you can buy several of them to go on different floors and test and kind of be act somewhat as a wireless intrusion detection system. But other than that, the functionality still kind of remains the same from back in the day, which was a Tuesday. And it allows you to kind of do man-in-the-middle attacks as well on clients. So it's a fun thing to Rickroll your family while you're at home. You can literally redirect them to any website you want. And basically, it kind of plays on the inherent insecurity of Wi-Fi and how Wi-Fi works. So for those of you super familiar with the OSI model, we're talking about, you know, things from OSI levels 1 and 2. So you can't encrypt layer 2 yet. You can't encrypt it, right? You have to have MAC addresses out there so that physically the radios know who they're talking to. You have a transmitter and you have a receiver, right, with a radio system. you have to have the, and the way that they address each other is via MAC addresses. So just like any normal network interface device you have, a Wi-Fi device is going to have that identification, right? And it's specific to your device. Now, that sounds great depending on what you're trying to do. And if you're doing like, you know, MAC address filtering, it's a great thing to have. However, it can also be used against you because wherever you go, that MAC address goes with you. Not only that, but depending on what kind of software you have on your device, you're also constantly beaconing out. Your device is constantly calling out now all the time to anybody who will listen, really. That's just kind of in the nature of radio is it transmits out because that's what it's supposed to do in order to make that connection and do that authentication. Now, once you connect to a Wi-Fi network, hopefully everybody's got everything set up properly on the back end and the rest of your communications will be encrypted. But those first couple of steps are not encrypted. The calling out to other stations, the constant beaconing, those are not encrypted functions. And they kind of can't be right now just because of, again, how Wi-Fi works. I went off on a really long tangent there. I know you just asked me to explain what a Wi-Fi pineapple was, and I literally went into a discussion.
That's a really great tangent, though.
Yeah.
It was like 2012 again. We used to teach a lot of Wi-Fi. Dustin and I used to, eat, sleep, everything Wi-Fi. I remember, like, especially when I first got real excited about it, that was when my now wife, I really impressed her by streaming a video over the Wi-Fi back in 2007. I was like, check this out.
And it's funny you bring up other members of IT as well, though, because I have a brother-in-law who is a programmer, and he's like, and I was talking to him about Wi-Fi one day, and he was like, this stuff's all magic to me. Like, Wi-Fi is just magic. And going off on most emerging technologies, and I'm not claiming that Wi-Fi is an emerging technology. I think it's emerged. But Wi-Fi 6, you could argue, is an emerging technology. What's that?
I hope it's emerged.
Yeah, it's emerged. It's here, right? It does. It appears to be magic, you know, to the end user. We really don't notice it, actually. We kind of take it for granted until it breaks, as with most technology goes, right? The cloud is amazing until it doesn't work. Wi-Fi is amazing until it doesn't work, and then you just want to plug back into a router and then have a cable, I guess, again. Although I don't think most people think about that. And with cell phones, you can't. But with 802.11ax, which is Wi-Fi 6, the promise there is, I think, 10 to 11 gigabit throughput, which is quite a bit. For those of you who are following 5G, now we're switching over to cellular network here. So 5G network is a 10 gigabit throughput. Theoretically, that's what it should be able to get. Now, there's a lot of things that go into that. It's not like the only thing you're sending back and forth is data. There's management frames, right? There's the management and the back end of the network that has to go back and forth. And that's sometimes where we see some security issues as well. When it comes to negotiating keys, for example, for a key exchange, or when it comes to just the different management functionalities that a Wi-Fi system has to go through on a millisecond basis, there's a lot of packets flying back and forth. And while those packets are flying back and forth, no other packets can be flying back and forth. Otherwise, you have collisions, which for those of you who remember back in the old days with...
Say token ring.
I was going to say BNC connectors, and I wasn't going to say token ring, but let's go ahead and say token ring.
Yeah.
You know that collision detection, collision avoidance is more of the way to go than something like a ring type system. However, that's kind of how Wi-Fi works now.
Yeah. And real quick, we're also not talking about the marketing terms either that are calling 5GE, right? Which are higher band 5G or just another term for really good 4G, like they did with 4G with HSPA Plus when they're like, this is 4G. Yeah.
Right.
Really, it's still 3G tech. Sorry.
Well, I know we're going off on a tangent here too, but 5G was kind of the same way. They were like, oh, we have a 5G network. It's America's first 5G network. And it was like, there's not even a standard out yet. Like, what do you mean?
And Wi-Fi 6 is like that. Which that's where the connection is, because they keep doing all the different drafts like they did with all the other variants, right? And people are building these routers and these devices that are, you know, Wi-Fi 6 ready and Wi-Fi 6 that. It's just a draft. It's like, man, I really hope IEEE doesn't just like ball everything up and throw it out, because you're really banking on it being iterative here.
Yes, I'm glad you were able to find the connection from our madness back into the actual stream.
Yeah, that's why they meet the podcast sometimes.
We lose track.
Saying voice for radio or face for radio. I can't remember. But yeah, there's also a lot of those security considerations with this too, because Wi-Fi is something that, and I'll point out two historic examples. My favorite, but from the technical angle, I'll say ones that I get real excited about for like hacks and security incidents. It was 2002, the TJ Maxx hack, Dustin. Was it 2002? Yeah. And what was crazy there was when they had the very first spec, 802.11b,
right? Wait, is that the first spec or is that second? Is that Wi-Fi 1 or 2? I can't remember.
So there's legacy Wi-Fi. There's legacy Wi-Fi and there's 802.11b. So yeah, 802.11 was the first one. 802.11b was the second one. Technically, this is really confusing because A came out after B.
Well, and it started on 900 megahertz too. We weren't even talking about this 2.4 gig stuff. And okay, now I hope someone writes in. That means they're listening. Well, don't like now. Be nice though. Whatever.
You can fast check. We might be a little out of date.
It's been a little bit. So we think it was 2002. And then the next thing you know, we're gonna get like email. They're gonna be like, I'll have Mr. Downs know it was 2003 January. And so anyway, what happened? Man, that was really
Target. Awesome.
Yeah, TJ Maxx had set up. They had all of their payment points, all of their registers and so forth, had Wi-Fi. And it was either 900 or it was 802.11b. And everything was sent out in the open. Some would say, wouldn't meet the PCI compliance these days, right? So what the hackers did is they got in a truck and they rolled up outside a TJ Maxx. And then they just started intercepting and messing with all of the transactions. They would get credit card information and stuff like that because it was all sent out in the open just by listening. They weren't even technically in the United States committing any crime simply by sitting, listening, and collecting packets. Then, though, taking that information and what they did with it, that was where they crossed the line. Ended up, stealing over several hundred thousand dollars, and they finally got caught when they tried to take the operation to the cloud, of all things. They're like, man, this is really long having to go to TJ Maxx all day and wait for people to spend money. What if we just went straight to the servers themselves? And that's where they got caught. But it was through leaving that one very crucial link unencrypted that all this data was exposed. Another one was when, and Dustin, you might know more on this, remember more of the details. What was the drone or something that had unencrypted wireless? People could live stream feeds and so forth. It was like DJI or something else. I can't remember. But you could totally see the feeds of these different drones and so forth, which has a lot of negative and concerning implications as well. Something that's really readily overlooked, something that people don't think about. Whoa, what was the name of that service that we could used to be able to go to and see everyone's, like all the different APs?
Weigel.
Yeah. Is that still up?
I don't know. Let's go to it.
Let's check. But it's Weigel.
Yeah, Weigel.com.
W-I-G-G-L-E. I got Wiggle.
Yeah.
There's a song called Wiggle. The Wiggles.
I got error establishing database connection. Now I'm hacking into something. Okay.
Oh, it's W-I-G-L-E. I put too many G's in there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's the if anyone goes to wigle.net, you then get to see all the different hotspots and not even just hotspots, but just different, what is it? The different locations of wireless networks, Wi-Fi.
Access points. Yep.
Yeah, access points throughout the world, right?
Yeah. So this is all like an open database. So it's like anybody who has either the app, so there's an Android app and there's an iOS app, or who is collecting data using something like Kali with Kismet or even a Pineapple. They can actually upload this data to this centralized database, and you can actually see. You can actually look on your street, and you can see if somebody's gone through and done a survey recently of your, you know, if you see your access point name on there. Again, there's nothing, how radio works, there's really nothing you can do about this. You can hide your SSID. That's one of the kind of secure by obscure functionalities you can do. But it's not, eventually you can, if you watch the network for long enough, and by long enough, I mean like 10 milliseconds, you can usually find out the name of a Wi-Fi access point, even if it's not broadcasting the SSID. So I just threw a lot of technical terms at you guys, and I'm sorry, I think we are getting a little too technical here. So let's back up. What Frank was talking about earlier is that this is one of the vectors, right? That's usually overlooked. And for me, what I find mostly in cybersecurity is that the physical vectors of attack are usually overlooked, mostly because they're not in the same department as the cybersecurity department, right? You're not in charge of physical security. However, you should work very closely with your physical security counterparts in order to make sure that you're counting that in your security or defense in depth security profile. Wi-Fi is not necessarily physical access. It's more along the lines of proximal access. but you still have to be within some vicinity, right? You have to be within some proximity of a Wi-Fi access point in order to run some kind of attack or in order to set up some kind of a listening post or whatever it is the attacker is trying to do. So that's just one of those things that you really need to pay attention to on your network. And like Frank mentioned, it's kind of overlooked. The different hardwares that are out there, you know, it's like anything else. There are zero days for specific routers. There are firmware hacks for specific routers. You know, I think, was it you, Frank, who,
aren't you?
Frank had a wireless router that I think had a zero day.
It was okay. No. Okay, so right, I had a router and they pushed an update to it. It had auto updates on, and then the update left the FTP open, wide open. And then that was weird because I found out about it by logging into my router one day and had a letter from a guy off 4chan who had written a script that went out, and I guess it was using Shodan or something, right? That went out and just searched for all of these open FTP ports with the signature from this ASUS router. And he left me a note in automated. He said, this is automated load. I'm leaving for people. You have this. He's like, hey, if I'm here, what do you think anyone else has done? And I'm like, well, great. I threw that router out too. So I didn't just close the FTP port. Also, by the way, but that's a point of vulnerability. And when you're talking about the hardware too, Dustin, like with the different types of antennas, with Yagi and so forth and directional antennas and so forth, you can really do some weird stuff from far away. And I wasn't crazy. It was a drone vulnerability, but it was with the U.S. Army. In 2009, where a bunch of insurgents were using it was a software called SkyGrabber to just watch the drone feeds because they were all unencrypted. And it shows like that. That's a real time, you know, value proposition there for encrypting your wireless and so forth, because it really is something that gets overlooked. I mean, Dustin and I are quote cyber experts. When do we have to be old enough? When are we old enough to be real cyber experts?
No, I'll take it. We're quote cyber experts.
But yeah, quote cyber experts, right? But still, we have these issues from time to time where you can't be everywhere at once. You can't keep an eye on everything. But something that you can take from time to time is a good check of your Wi-Fi and your wireless to make sure that things are operating appropriately and securely.
Absolutely. And there are great tools out there that are free for use. Kismet, of course, I mentioned earlier, is one of those. Yeah, it's one of those tools they just did a redo of it, I think, a couple years ago. And they made the graphical user interface a web interface, which is much nicer than the old Ncurses text face interface that they used to have. You can load that on any Linux laptop. You can download Kali and run it off that. And it'll, the way the drivers are nowadays, not like back in the old days where you had to find the proper card that could be put into monitor mode so that you could do all this stuff. Most Wi-Fi cards actually allow you to put them into monitor mode nowadays with just the basic drivers that are installed with Kali.
And I was reading even Windows is becoming more open for their points to be put into monitor mode. So that's nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. So and I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, Kismet or some other. There's probably some other. I think there is a Windows one. I just can't think of it.
I can't remember what it was called.
Yeah.
Because we would never pay for the licensing fee because that was right. The difference.
Yeah, you had to pay for it, right? They both did the same thing. But you can, you know, you can run a quick scan to look for any possible rogue AP points, right? Things that aren't authorized to be on the network. And then just checking and making sure that each AP is configured properly. Usually in an enterprise system, you have a device that is controlling those things or a centralized hub that will control the different configurations for your access points. But again, it's always good to check. It never hurts. And it is one of those overlooked things that can get you into trouble because you are technically broadcasting outside of your building. It's very hard to tune a Wi-Fi network so that it only broadcasts within a certain radius.
Oh, no, Marriott did it really well until they got sued, right? with that special wallpaper or paint that would block and force people to use their own. Yeah. That was a real thing. That was 5 years ago. Marriott got into a lawsuit because they specifically built and painted their, it was either through paint or wallpaper, but they put up signal blocking substrate, I guess, or substance, if however you want to put it, that ensured that when you were in Marriott, you could only use their Wi-Fi. And then they would charge their prices and so forth. So that's one example. And that's hard to do. It's not something, I guarantee you, still some leaked out. So
the Wi-Fi was going everywhere. It was, yep. They tried to contain it and they couldn't. where did we go so wrong in this podcast?
I don't know. But the problem is we started talking about Wi-Fi and it's just, that's the passion, right? That's something that Dustin and I have been passionate about for a long time. And the applications are changing so much. It's not just for data in your traditional way of like sending data back and forth. People are mapping out,
using Wi-Fi to like map entire rooms and so forth. What does the room look like if it's completely dark? They'll use Wi-Fi and they'll do measurements on how long it takes the signal to bounce back and forth and so forth. The next thing you know, you start seeing images of different things and actual objects in a room and so forth. So it has so many different applications that way. It can do speed measurement depending on like point A to point B, and you're starting to see more of that stuff come out, right? And you could make the argument, well, that's just, you know, radio waves and the use of them. Well, sure, but that's kind of what Wi-Fi is, right?
Right. Yeah. And radio waves are like, you know, radio frequency, RF theory, like it's one of those technologies we don't really think about that we use, but we truly don't understand it fully. You know, it's one of those.
Like Tylenol. Right? They're like,
I think they know how Tylenol. I hope they know how Tylenol works.
I'm not a doctor, but don't they still not know how it makes you feel better?
Anyway. I think they do. No, I think they well, it's like inhibitor or receptors. I don't know. Okay, I'm not a doctor.
The essential oils. Continue.
Okay. Back to Wi-Fi and RF theory. Yeah. So we understand it enough to be able to control it, enough to be able to send data. It's kind of like quantum, though. And those of you who follow quantum theory or, you know, quantum computing, we understand that we don't understand it, but we also understand how to measure it in specific ways. And that's kind of how we're getting around not truly understanding how to utilize it, right? Or understanding what's going on so that we can utilize it. The same is kind of true for RF theory. It's a theory. We get it. We know how to control it, and we know how to tune electrical circuits to it so that they can send signals back and forth. But it kind of does go into that quantum level. Anything with a wave is kind of just, it's one of those concepts that you just kind of have to agree. Like, I'm not going to know this unless I'm going to go to school and become get my PhD in theoretical physics. I'm just not going to I'm only going to get it to a certain point. And I think that's what kind of turns a lot of people off to looking too deep into their Wi-Fi to begin with, because I think it's intimidating. At the very beginning of this podcast, Frank and I were spouting off IEEE, you know, 802.11, A, B, C, D, you know, all the 802.11s, right? And there are consumerized versions of that, 802.11n, right? 802.11a, 802.11b. They don't sound that consumer when I say them, actually. They still sound.
Well, that's why they made the word Wi-Fi, right? Because they're like, right. No one's going to want to buy something that says 802.11, whatever, on the box. It's like, well.
That's right. So that's why the Wi-Fi Alliance actually was formed, because they were like, IEEE, you're way too out there for us. But I think it's one of those things that's a little intimidating and shouldn't be. We do have some great tools out there, open source, non-open source, for spectrum analysis, for protocol analysis, even of the 802.11 Wi-Fi packets that are going back and forth on a particular network. So, and there are plenty of YouTube videos.
So many YouTube videos.
With people showing you, you know, how you can use different things and how you can use different utilities to test out your Wi-Fi.
Thanks, Frank and Dustin.
That's all we have time for on this episode. You can hear from the Cyber Pros every month by subscribing to the ISACA podcast.